whenever we begin to discuss the sugya of geirus, particularly with an eye on halacha maisa, so it's always important just to put things into proper perspective. You know, there are different degrees of shailas, even though as a rav, we don't take all shailas seriously. We even the yalav yavo shailas, quote unquote, but alav b'chein, there are degrees of shailas. So a person asks you a yalav yavo shaila, we hope we get it right, but you know, between you and me, you get it wrong, okay, the world's not going to come to an end. A person asks you a shaila l'chashabes, and your matur is a skila, that's bad. But, you know, I mean, maybe their world will come to an end, but the world of Christ, all theirs will come to an end. But if you make a serious mistake in Uchus Geirus, that's a very, very serious problem. Because Uchus Geirus doesn't only impact the person who's asking the shaila, it doesn't only impact their family, it doesn't only impact the immediate surroundings. Of course, that impacts it in Christ or for Deridaris. So therefore, we want to really make sure that we understand properly how to deal with the Inyan of Geirus, how to pass in Shaila and Uchus Geirus properly, and to really maintain the standards of Geirus as they've been maintained and properly have been nimset us with Deridaris. So let's try to get a little bit of a background on some of the basic sugyas of geirus. Again, we'll try to mix a little bit of lumdus to make it a little bit, you know, exciting. And then obviously with that eye towards halacha maisa to figure out how many of these shailas, many of these issues play out, practically speaking, today. So whenever we begin to discuss a sugya of geirus, so you have to know where to start. You have to start all the way back at the beginning. You have to start the very first geirus in the history of Klal Yisrael, and that's what the Gemara Maseches Krisos and Daf Tes tells us. That the very first geirus was Matan Torah. And Klal Yisrael was transformed from being, in a sense, Bnei Noach into becoming Bnei Yisrael. They were endowed with Kedushas Yisrael. And therefore, we have to look for that as a model. How do you do that? How do you pull off that stunt of going from being Bnei Noach to becoming Bnei Yisrael? Now, notwithstanding the Machlokes Tosfos and the Ramban, there's a Ramban Chumash and Bashzema, the quotes of Machlokes Yavasal and Tosfos, what exactly the status of Avisenu was, Kodem Matan Torah. Did they have a certain degree of Kedushas Yisrael? Not a certain degree of Kedushas Yisrael. Were they stam Bnei Noach? Yeah, that's a nice family, Lomdisha, Hashkafik, Machlokes. But Tachas, bottom line is that the real bona fide Kedushas Yisrael, in terms of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, clearly began at Matan Torah. And therefore, something very, very special, something very, very unique happened at the moments of Matan Torah. So, what exactly happened? How do you explain, how do you define what this transformation is all about? The Gemara in Krisos points to three different historical steps that happened, which all combined together, in a sense, to become the first Geirus, the Geirus and Mas of Klal Yisrael. And however that worked, in the back of the days of Yitzhak Mitzrayim slash Matan Torah, that's what's going to work until today as well. So anytime we have a perspective, Geirus comes to join Klal Yisrael, we go back to the ABCs, go back to the Dar Midbar, and we figure out, well, what happened then? How did they become Jewish in the first place? So the Gemara highlights three different stages along the way. One was Mila, one was Tvila, and one was the offering of Karbanos. So it's a combination of these three factors that creates the model of Geirus, which again is basically binding until today. We'll talk about Karban in a moment, where that almost got a little bit, you know, a sidetrack was about, obviously, in the absence of this mitzvah. But Mila and Tvila, which are the main components of Geirus, was on the from there. Obviously, if a woman was talking about only Tvila, where does this come from? What's the makor? What's the source that these things actually did take place in the time of Yitzhak Mitzrayim slash Matan Torah? The Gemara quotes Pesukim. The Gemara says that when Klal Yisrael had to eat Korban Pesach at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, because Kol Oral Yochol Bo, obviously Bris Mila had to be performed. And the Gemara is interpreting that Bris Mila was not just to enable them to eat Korban Pesach. That Bris Mila was not just to fulfill the bris that they should have been doing all the years all along the way from Avraham Avinu, but it actually had a component of a geirus to it. We're going to keep that in the back of our minds, because that's going to become very, very important. The Maisa, so the Mila of Klal Yisrael, the Shastis Mitzrayim, which was the prerequisite to Matan Torah, that was a Milas Geirus, and that's a din that we mimic with others. Where was the Tevila that took place at the time of Matan Torah? So here the Gemara has a little bit more difficulty tracking down what the Tevila was. The Gemara suggests that maybe the Mokar is V'chipsus Bigdeichem, V'chipsus Plaseichem, but they had to wash their clothing before Matan Torah. So maybe what that possibly means is Tevila V'mikvah. And they had to be tovel their clothing, Kavachamim had to be tovel themselves. So the Gemara is not so sure that serves as a valid mochar, because maybe that doesn't even mean tovel in the mikvah. Maybe it means just sending to the dry cleaner, maybe just to clean their suits before Yontif. So we're not even sure that's the mochar. So the Gemara is another possible mochar. The Gemara says that since there was a hazor sadam, there was a certain sprinkling of dam on Klal Yisrael, assuming that's what we're going on, the Yisrael Am, which is also machlokes, is what exactly that means, but assuming there was some kind of a hazor sadam on Klal Yisrael, can we read the Enazabal of Tevila? We have a tradition, we have Pash, Halach, Moshe, Sinai, that whenever you have a Hazar, that always goes hands in hand with the Tevila, like in this week's, like in Pashas Parak, this week's Alef Baf there. So there's a Hazar, and there's a, always goes hand in hand, the Hazar Samayi goes hand in hand with the Tevila, the Mikvah, etc. The Gemara tracks down some kind of a Pasuk, some kind of a Mokar, either the Mokar from Bigdechem, or the Mokar from Enazabal of Tevila, but in all the dust saddles, There was a tefillah that took place historically in the Midbar, and the goal of that tefillah was to be part of the Geirus process. So we have a tefillah based on Sukkim, that in Pashas Bo. We have a tefillah based on a series of something in Pashas Yisro and Mishpatim. And then the third one, Korban, is actually the easiest of the three. That's the most explicit. The Torah describes in Pashas Mishpatim, the end of Pashas Mishpatim. There were a whole series of Kabbalists that were brought at the time of Matan Torah. And the Gemara interprets those Kabbalists to be a Korban Hagir. The Gemara just adds on and says, Priestess, Ihochi, why don't we bring a Korban Tevin on the base of Mikdash? How can we become Jewish today? So the Gemara says, no. We have a Xeris HaKosa that's called the Deirei Seichem. The Deirei Seichem teaches me, we're going to hopefully come back to this in other contexts as well throughout the Shiurim. But the Deirei Seichem teaches me that the show must go on. Who was Geirus? There will never ever be a generation without the possibility of Geirus. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously knew in advance when he wrote that Pasuk of the Chumash, there's going to come a generation with no base of Mikdash. Alpha Bichayim, the Torah writes of Deir Seichem. So this is teaching me that even in the absence of a base of Mikdash, absence of a korban, the Geirus is still chal. So Bizman Azeh, you have to do Mila, and you have to do Tefillah, and you should theoretically have to do korban. But Lamais, you don't have to. The korban is Dama'akev, and that's a special in Xeris HaKosa. Even though the korban is Dama'akev, the Gemara says explicitly that La'asa Lavo, so any of the people converted at this period of korban, are going to have to bring their korbanos Geirus. So that's what the Gemara says, that there was a practice after the second base of Mikdash was destroyed, that some Geirim would start to separate money, they put aside money in a special drawer, they leave it in a bag, put it in the drawer, and they would earmark it for the base of Mikdash. When everybody in Mikdash, they would bring money to be mashed of the Geirus through the Korban Geirus. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, who lived at the time of the Korban, so shortly after the Korban, he saw this practice continuing, and he thought it was not a good idea, even though it was a very noble gesture of these Geirim, but it was logistically a nightmare, because you can have money sitting around in your drawer that has Kedusha to it, and that's the problem. It's going to lead to the Elah. So in order to prevent this practice, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was revival that practice, and he said that nobody should be mafresh money for the Korbanos anymore. But the Heiri Bana Mikdash will not have to bring the Korban, it's just that we're not going to set aside money for it right now. So the Korban part really is not part of what was Geirus, the Heiri Bana Mikdash, hopefully the next 5 weeks, so we'll be able to talk about it a little bit more. But right now, we're going to focus obviously much more on the first two parts, on the part of Mila and the part of Tevila. So the Gemara tells us clearly that Mila Tevila was practiced for the men, obviously the women only Tevila was practiced, but it's still not 100% clear, is all of this Ma'akeh B'dievet, just because the Torah describes this is going on in Mitzrayim, just because this happened in Matan Torah, does this mean that this is absolutely kuva? Not everything the Torah describes is absolutely kuva. Sometimes the Torah describes an entire process, and certain parts of the process are critical, and certain parts of the process are not critical. Tell the mushroom, bring a carbon. But the shkita is pretty important. The zrika is pretty important. The hektech halavim is not so important. I mean, if you don't do it, the carbon is still kosher. Well, let's say we have a chalitza. So not doing the chalitza part, not taking the shoe off, is very, very important, and the whole chalitza is no good. Not doing the rekika, not doing the spitting. Like said, Tarawi Paschal is not even ma'akev. With the Kriya Sapash is not ma'akev according to anybody. So you can have sometimes a mitzvah satara that has multiple components to it, and not every single part is ma'akev to the end. So this model of Geirus, everybody agrees this is the model of Geirus. It was never Shaila from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu onwards. It was never Shaila that this is how you convert Milo Tevila for a man, Tevila for a woman. This was always the standard of Geirus, but it was unclear in the days of the Taroim which part of this is mamish ma'akev. So one Tana says the Mila, that's the Ikuva no matter what. And the other Tana says the Tvila, that's the Ikuva no matter what. So we paskin, like the third sheet, that they're both the Ikuva. So we paskin, Rabbi Yochanan, and Halacha, Eino Ger Achimo V'Yitvol. So we paskin unequivocally that without a Mila, without a Tvila, the person is not Jewish. Finished. And obviously, for a woman without a Tvila, the woman would not be Jewish. So we paskin, not only is this part of what we call the Mitzvah's Geirus, this is part of the very essence of the Geirus, the creation of the Chalitz Geirus. And the chalos, the transformation, becoming Jewish, doesn't occur without a combination of the Mila and the Tevila. Sometimes we have a situation that arises that makes it impossible for us to do a Mila. Why is that? Because the person was already immolated, was already circumcised. This phenomenon already exists in the days of the Tanoim. There were nations in the ancient world that also practiced circumcision. So you have this fellow who comes, and he wants to convert, but the Maisi is already circumcised. So what are we supposed to do? We can't give another Brit, so what are we going to do? So this was a big Machlekes HaTanoim. So this sugya appears in the fourth paragraph of Masechet Yevamos, in the ninth paragraph of Shabbos. The Gemara quotes Machlekes HaTanoim, what do you do at this point? So some of the Torah said, you do nothing. So we can't have a meal, it's another meal. So the show goes on, and you do a tefillah and finish. He becomes converted like an akeva, like a woman. That's one opinion. The other Tana says, no, even though you can't do a real meal, because there's no Orha Orla there anymore, but the halacha has a substitute mila. There's a concept in halacha called the substitute mila. If and when you can't draw a milah, then you have to do the equivalent, and then for that toughest tamaris, you have to draw a little bit of blood from that area, and that halachically takes on the significance as if you did a bris milah, and that would be necessary. So again, we pasuk l'halacha eino gera chimo b'yifo. So according to one opinion, Tanoim, achimo, you have to do milah, and if you can't do milah, then you better do something that meets the criteria of milah. And the only thing that halacha has for us is this principle, this institution, called the toughest tamaris. So the truth is that the Gemara has this idea of doing that tavas abris in cases where you can't do mila, even out of the realm of gavis. There's a whole nother sugi about this in the 19th parak of Shabbos about bris mila. And years ago, it used to be mila and gavis used to be the same view, right? Now we separated, so I don't talk too much about mila. But the Gemara has a parallel sugi in the 19th parak of Shabbos about what if you have a nolik shumol, you have a baby that was born in the same circumstances, means he doesn't have really have an or orla, so what do you do? So one time it says, you do nothing, finish, so make a shalom zochor, make a kiddush, I don't do what anyone does, you know, there's no bris. And the other Tana says, no, you have to have a bris. What do you do? There's no bris. There's no ora orlos. You have to have a bris. That's in place. So the Gemara has a whole discussion, both in Shabbos and in Yevamos, about these two dinim. The din of the potential requirement of a tavastam bris for a gershin is gag shu mohol, as well as a potential tavastam bris for katan shenolad mohol. And the two shahs are not tali zebizem. They're not necessarily tali zebizem. They may be related, maybe not. There is far as the Kamlikan. The Gemara quotes some Tanoim about one way in one place and another way. And Tosfos tries to go through all the lumbus as to why the Shahs are not necessarily identical. So again, we're focusing on Gavis right now. So we're not sure what the din is. What would that look like? Do we require Tavis Tavis? Do we not require Tavis Tavis? So Tosfos throws the hands up and quotes, you have to Rishon and said, we paskin that you do require Tavis Tavis. Other half to Rishon and says, you don't. And we don't know what to do. We're not sure what to do. So in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin to say that we're not sure what to do. So therefore, if you have a Gersh who is ready, circumcised medically 20 years ago. Now he comes forward, he wants to convert. So we don't want to take a chance. We're not going to let him get away with nothing because according to some Rishonim, he's not going to be Jewish and we don't do anything. So therefore, we are going to insist on a Tavis Tavris B'Torah Schomer, B'Torah Stavri, B'Torah Schomer, B'Torah Safek, something to Raisa. We'd like the person to be Jewish with holiday. We don't want to have, we don't want a Jew according to some Rishonim floating around. We want it to be a full-fledged Jew. So we're going to do that Tavis Tavris, at least B'Torah Safek. However, in deference to the fact that we're not even sure that we should do it in the first place, we're not going to recite a bracha. Normally, when you do a mila, or if you're really, really held that you have to do a tavas abris, you probably have recited a bracha. Since we're not 100% sure that that's true, so therefore our practice is we'll do it, but we won't do it with a bracha. In deference, maybe it's a suffix bracha lachal, so we're not going to do this. That's what the general practice is today, that we will go that extra mile and do the tavas abris, at least to is suffix. What exactly do we, what are we going to do exactly? What is physically practiced tavas abris? That's a further shot in the poskim. That's a nitty-gritty, it's a lumdish nitty-gritty, as to which part of the aver exactly we're extracting blood from. So the part of the aver, like the fleshy part, which would bleed, so that's what many poskim say, that's what many poskim did in practice. And then there were those, the chazinish, had a little bit of a different twist, and maybe the tavas abris has to be on the more towards the top part of the aver, which is usually covered by the orla, and instead of bleeding, which is would do in a conventional way, maybe scratching it, that's also good enough. We make a little tiny scratch in that area, but that's Nishra Hadam, so like in the Shabbos on the area, we equate that with bleeding. So again, that's a different issue. You know exactly how to do it. If I'm not mistaken, I think that the practice that most of the mother did him is still the old-fashioned way, correct? That I think that, I was told that I think that's the old way of doing it, to just make a mamash, a teeny, teeny, teeny needle, and a little mashu. That's efficient. But again, there are others who question maybe there should be a little bit more, a little bit of a different part of the Ava should be the recipient of that. So getting back to our story. So we are going to insist at least you suffer for this at Tavis Tavris. Are there any situations that arise that even we're going to forego? Even we're going to look the other way and say, that's all right, you don't need that Tavis Tavris. So there's a shiloh that's come up, fairly common shiloh that comes up as follows. A baby is born, and we think the baby is Jewish. Why is the baby Jewish? Father sounds Jewish, mother is Jewish. Everyone seems to be Jewish over here. So great, so the moel comes, and we make a nice, beautiful bris, and we serve bagels, and we have little trains that go around on the table, and we have locks, and everything. Come on, everything's married, everything's beautiful. And 20 years later, it comes to our attention that the kid probably wasn't Jewish all along. Why wasn't he Jewish all along? His mother's mother was converted, probably shulikin din 50 years before. So nobody knew. Wow, could be the family's totally from. Nobody knows what's going on. And all of a sudden, Nebuchadnezzar, we come to this terrible realization. Okay, it's not terrible. It just means that if somebody at home wants to be Jewish, so we'll have to be Megari everybody again. But now we have a big problem, or a challenge. Namely, we have to go ahead and do another Hatafas Tamris, because now when this 20-year-old boy, it's coming from his mother who's converting at the age of 16, that's not so terrible, she's a woman from the different finish. But the 20-year-old boy is coming to convert now, so we start going through the process. Okay, let's go. Let's do a milah right now. So he says, Rabbi, do a milah. I had a bris, the mile did a milah on me 20 years ago. So okay, we're not going to do a milah again. Oh, so now our minds start turning. Wait a second. So now if you don't do a milah, so you have to go on top of some bris. So do we have to do that? Is that the same as the guy who came with medical circumcision and now wants to convert 20 years later? Or maybe this is different. What's the svar? This is different. There's a huge svar. There's a tremendous difference in the two cases. In the original case that the Rishayim, that the Gemara and the Rishayim were talking about, so it was talking about a situation where the person's original bris, I can't even say it was a bris, it was a circumcision. It was a medical or other religious rite of circumcision. It wasn't being done, it wasn't being done, it was just being done as some other kind of agenda. So that kind of a removal of a foreskin for some other kind of medical or other like religious agenda, that's not a bris milah. So for that, the halacha says, according to some Rishonim, Misafik, you have to do a tavis d'bris. But here, the bris was done for our religion. It was done, lachnisa v'shalvinu, it was done by Enmael, it was done in shul, it was done in bagels, it was done in all the trappings of a bris. So the fact that there's one small piece of information that we weren't aware of, we thought that he was Jewish, we didn't realize he was going, oh, come on, how important is that? So if only it was done to Teres Mila, if it's done to Teres Mila, maybe that's a Mila. So that Mila that was done 20 years ago was a Mila's mitzvah, we'll turn around 20 years later, retroactively, and say that's such a double, that should serve as a Mila's gerus as well. So that's a big, big shaila. Can you say such a thing or not? So that's going to be a big enough kibbutz. It's a big enough ayah, big enough, huge enough kibbutz with Dina. Do we insist that that's up to some person now or not? Do we have a right to say that this milah is better than the case of the medical circumcision of the real guy? Or do I say, no, Kolzman, it wasn't done the shame. Geirus, a milah not done the shame. Geirus is dvarim b'teilu, and it requires the substitute be suffig of a tavas dambris. That's a big, big question. Do we have any rayas to say to Shiloh? So there are two rayas that are thrown around for Shiloh. One of them we'll be talking about a lot more when we talk about Tavila. But almost like a parallel shayla that come up. What if a person went to a mikvah and they didn't go to shame Tavila's geirus? They went to shame Tavila's mitzvah, shame Tavila's Israel. If you have a non-Jewish woman who went swimming one day in the beach, so that's not a geirus. But what if you have a woman who went to the mikvah thinking that she's a Jewish, and she went to the mikvah with Teres Tavis HaMishpacha, thinking that she's 100% Jewish, and then we realized an hour later, wait a second, she wasn't Jewish all along. So is that tefila good? So maybe one could argue that you don't need kavanah l'shem geiros. As long as you have kavanah l'shem yadus, you want to be part of the religion, that's good enough, even though you don't realize even at the time that you're undergoing a tefila l'shem geiros. That's a big, big question. Hopefully we're going to talk about that later on. That's a major machlekes of Rishonim. Is such a concept exist that you can have a tefila yadus almost substituting as a tefila geiros. So that may be a similar idea in terms of milah also. That here I'm doing a milah Yisrael, so maybe the Yisrael can double as a substitute for a milah segeirus. That's a shaila. But there may be another more fascinating raya. There may almost be a historical precedent for this idea that a milah Yisrael may almost double as a milah segeirus and thereby no longer necessitating a tavas dambris. And that potential proof is goes all the way back, mamish back to the beginning of time, back to the milah of Avosenu b'Mitzrayim. The Ramban in the fourth paragraph poses a challenge as to what exactly played out in the door of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So they got this tzivoy on the right before Pesach called Oro LeYoichel Bo. So everybody ran to go get a bris milah. Everybody ran to get a bris milah. Only those people who hadn't been observing Mila went to go get a bris Mila. Shevet Levi, as I'll say in the Medrash, Tishamur Masech Bishra Yisaru, they kept Mila all along. So Moshe had a bris, Aaron had a bris, all the Zim, all had a bris, even in Mitzrayim. So it poses the Ramban a challenge. So what did they do on that first Erev Pesach? They didn't get a bris. What did they get a bris for? They're not an Oral. They already had a bris. So what did they do exactly? So what's the problem? So Chodesh did not say they go bris. So wait a second, we just learned from Teresa's Daf Tes that the milah that took place at Yetzias Mitzrayim was the milah's geirus. That was halachically necessary to transform them from goyim to becoming Kedush Yisrael. So what did the Levim do? What in the world, what process did the Levim do to become Jewish? What milah did they do? So the Rabban offers two possibilities. The Rabban said, I wasn't there. Well, no, I mean, we were all there for Sano Tzimisham, you know, in that sense. But the Rabban said, I don't remember. I'm not sure what happened. So the Rabban says, two possibilities. One possibility was they took a bit of Tavas Tamris.
Could be. The Tavas Tavras. One of the two Ramban says, no. Maybe they didn't need a Tavas Tavras. Why? Because they had a Mila already. They didn't have a circumcision. They had a Mila. It was a Mila done to Teres Yisrael. It was being done Lachnis of Yisrael Avinu. It was being done the Kayan, the Posse of Chumash Yitash Lemach, the Brisman Avinu. That kind of a Mila can double as a Mila's Geirus. And therefore, there would be no need to substitute that for a Tavas Tavras at a later date. So the Ramban says he's not sure. He doesn't quote. Two possibilities within the B'nai Levi. Did the B'nai Levi have a Tavas Tavras or not? So one could argue that that's actually there also, that the little baby who was born, who we thought he was Jewish, and we did a meal on him, he had a mile, the whole 9 yards, and then 20 years later we find that he was never Jewish, do we need to do a Tavas Tavras? So maybe that's the same shout out to Ramban. If you hold that the Levium Taka needed a Tavas Tavras, so then this baby probably would need one also. If you hold the Levium didn't need a Tavas Tavras, so then maybe this baby wouldn't need one either. So one could argue that's the same shout out, one could argue that no, there's still not the same. What's the difference? The huge difference. In the case of the Levium, not only was it a Mila L'Shem Yisrael, it was a meaningful Mila L'Shem Yisrael. It was Tofis, it was Chal. There was a significance in the halakhic universe to that Mila. It was a Mila L'Kayim HaShem El Avavino. When you do a bris on a goy, you can think from today till tomorrow he's Jewish, but at the end of the day, nothing happened. So you circumcised a non-Jewish child. So just because you did it with a bracha and you made a mishabeirach and you got a kvapta and you had kishul yo, that's all nice, but it's still meaningless. You basically just did a circumcision on a goyish child. So one could argue that's not even the Ramban. It's one step less than the Ramban's case. So the Ramban stuff wasn't even so sure that he was right. Even about the day Levi, he was hemming and hawing. So we're not sure that even that Ramban, but even still over here. So at the end of the day, you have a lot of stuff in here that, let's not forget, put everything into perspective. We're not even sure that you need a Tavas Tavras ever in any of these cases, because half the Rishayim say even a real Goyish in this guy, Kshumol, doesn't require a Tavas Tavras. And the Mechaz Chinuch throws another monkey wrench into this discussion. Mechaz Chinuch with Tzabei says that this idea that when you can't do a bris, you do a Tavas Tavras, is that a deraisa? That's a possible chumash. What's halacha moshiach? Where does that come from? Maybe the whole thing is derabanan. Maybe min haTorah there is type of such thing as a substitute for a bris. Maybe you don't need anything min haTorah. So we're not even sure we have a real requirement of anything over here. And even if we do, we're not even sure it's a derabanan requirement. And Ramban had a half of a svara that maybe a meal l'shem mitzvah would be good enough. And some Rishonim hold that a tefillah l'shem mitzvah is good enough for tefillah l'shem geiros. So you have a lot of stardom over here in Lahokos. That's where there are different practices and different but they did him. But how do you handle this kind of a situation? So sometimes what can even help us even put us over the edge in terms of even being a little bit more mekel is that sometimes the mold was sharp. He may have noticed that there's something fishy going on here. Sometimes when you walk the simcha, you can already see that it's not everything is 100%. So it could be that the model may have noticed that there's something funny here, and he may have had in mind when he did the bris a little bit of l'shem geiros. Maybe in the back of his mind, maybe he was thinking that just in case down the line something goes wrong, maybe we should do the l'shem geiros, so that would make it much better. Remember, we once involved in a case and we were trying to figure out there's enough to use the 2 points. So this says this kind of a thing. That I found out later that the mother's geirus was a little bit iffy. So we're trying to figure out whether the boys would have been born from this mother required to do a Tavas Tavras. So one of the people we wanted to consult with was the mother. So we wanted to find out who was the mother of these kids. So when I asked them, did you sense that there was something strange going on at the time? It would have been fairly, obvious that there was something not 100%, going on here properly. So we wanted to get a sense of the Moel Chapta. The Moel Chapta, so then that would have been good. The Moel may have had him on the Shem Geirus. If you go to Techa Palma, the Moel wasn't alive anymore. So we generally don't get cursed from the other world. But Liotzi would have been alive. He could have possibly filled us in on that information. So in that particular case, actually, the base at the time was Mekel, not to insist on a new Tavas Tavras. Again, you see so many of these things that the whole Tavas Tavras is very, very shaky. We don't even know if it's a deraisa or derabanan. We're not even sure they even need it altogether. And according to many, you have the svar of the Ramban. And it could be you had it even. A lot of stuff in Malko. So they didn't feel that it was necessary to do a Tavas Tavras. Again, they're different, but they didn't have a good standard about how to deal with the shadow. This is a fairly common shadow.
But then the fact that the
Moel
had in mind for Geirus, does that work because the parents
don't really mean anything. It's really what the moel's action is doing. You know, if you take on a ger katan, which is a whole other sugya, which hopefully we'll talk about later on.
There is a another shadow that the Rishayim Tosfos talks about a situation that could arise where you really don't need a mitzvah altogether. You don't even need to have a bris. And that is, what if it's nichras agid? What if there's no gid there anymore? The person doesn't have that aver, that organ has been was an injury, whatever it was. And there's nothing to be mild, nothing to have a bris anymore. Then Tosfos writes, I'm sure the person doesn't need anything. So how do they become Jewish? It's like in a kema. The same way the Kaver doesn't have the ability to do a milah, so you do nothing, you just do tefillah and call it a day. And that becomes the way that the person without the gid becomes nichas of kedusha shishra. There was a shaila that came up in Europe in the early 1900s about a possible application of the shaila, and that was, there was apparently a real story about a person who wanted to convert, and the person was, hemophiliac or something, a related kind of condition, but it was in such a way that it really would have been very dangerous to do a bris on him. On the other hand, he really wanted to convert sincerely. So the shaila was, can we convert him without doing anything? Won't we? No bris, nothing. He's from Shinora. He's an old gummer. But we can't do it. It's just medically not sound to do it. So there was some who wanted to argue, well, become nevish. So the same way, let's say this person was born Jewish. If he was born Jewish, so we'd say, okay, the doctor said he can't do it. So if the doctor said that's dangerous, so he can't do it for smila. Someone would say, good, now she's doich, the mitzvah of mila. So it's doich, the requirement of mila for Geras also. So all the other places said, no, that is machlal, not true. The Chaboyza is a true. The Lahoyla is a true. The comparison is completely incorrect. Now when it comes to the mitzvah's mila, the mitzvah's mila, the Kishma Kegim, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to do a bris mila. So mitzvah is governed by the rules of the Kol Nefesh. So if you are a chadash, you have potential chadash, you have bris mila. So you don't do it. So finish. You don't do it. And you're Jewish without doing it. And you don't do the mitzvah. They say, well, you mechal Shabbos, mechal Kol Nefesh. Over here, the mila for a year is a chalois. This is what makes the status. This is what creates the status of being Jewish. Let's say, Moshe Mother Vidim. I don't think they give this one. I mean, Moshe Mother Vidim. Let's say you have a person wants to get married. And I don't know, that they have some kind of a medical condition, that if they put a ring on a woman's finger, they're going to blow. They're going to die. Some guys that talk to something, it sounds that way, but it's impossible. So they're going to die if they try to get married. So we're going to say, okay, but they really want to be married, they just can't do the ma'aseh kedushah. Okay. Pikuach nefesh, so pikuach nefesh would declare that they're married without putting the ring on the finger. I said, pikuach nefesh just means that you don't have to do certain mitzvahs, pikuach nefesh doesn't change poison. So if the reality is, the only way to create the chalois is through the creating the chalois. You didn't create the chalois, it's the shkhalois. So it's over here, it's what all the Gedolei Chassidim say, that the comparison is not correct to chalal. So we assume the halacha that if for whatever reason you can't do it, you have a big problem. Then you have to figure out some kind of an ace, or the person just can't become Jewish. So not to convert the person, then hopefully he doesn't die. So what are you going to do?
Just
so
much
of
the question of onis.
Yes, onus, that, you know, it's related a little bit, but I don't think anyone would go so far in the Rambam Chalos. Maybe Mrs. Essay, this is even more, this is one notch higher than Mrs. Essay. This is, Tachlis, did I create the Chalos of Kiddush? Did I create the Chalos of Kiddush?
Could you do a
Tachlis Tam Bursa
like?
And it depends what the case is. Maybe a hemophiliac may die from that. As bad as that, we have ways of doing bris milas even on people without blood. There are lasers, there are other ways, bloodless surgeries today. So you know, that's a general question. But what would we do about, let's say, a Jewish baby who's born who cannot bleed at all? So we would figure out some other ways to do it. Obviously, when you do a bris, it's supposed to have some dam, but if you can't get some, it's better that it shouldn't be moral, then even if you can't do it, there's some bris.
I seem to remember
Rabbi
Tando saying, some Muslims say, if there's no blood, then it's not a mila.
Yes, that's a question about, that's the clamp issue, how much of a role is thumbs on bris. But anyway, I don't mean a thumbs on bris, I wouldn't talk about it. I mean, how much is the bleeding part of the meal, but Kuliyam Lepliki, that let's say if the other option is to leave it as an oral gomor, that's for sure not an option. Father's better to have to remove the oral event, even if it's going to be no bleeding at all. So push them to show the only way to do it is without bleeding, so for sure you should know. Okay, so again, so we.
And let's say, the person died, they never had a tafas tam bris. Do we paskin, they were Jewish?
He's a suffolk. So you wonder, what do you do with such a person? He's dead. He's dead.
Let's say it's Yerusha, whatever else comes.
The biggest stuff kamina is kvura for us. And usually, not asking too many shaylas. This is a real shaylas. These are very real shaylas. You have a person who dies, and it's a shaylas whether he's Jewish or not. There's a real bona fide suffolk ladina whether he's Jewish or not. What do you do with him? So on the one hand, to bury him, to bury him in a Jewish cemetery. He's not supposed to bury, you know, Jews and goyim in the same, you know, next to each other. To bury him in a goyish cemetery, so it's also not right. The Suffolk deraisa, maybe we're mechuvim kvura on him. So that would be a big problem. Most people talk about burying with a mechitza. They talk about making a tzuris pesach. The pesukim talk about making a tzuris pesach over his kever, or put bushes around his kever. I had a shad ma'isa shayt nachoy. I had a shad like that. There was once there was an issue. Wasn't clear about a certain status of somebody, and they were buried already. They were buried in a regular Jewish cemetery, and some people were upset about it, told about it, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what can we possibly do. So one of the one of the suggestions that was made is that if you plant bushes that are 10 tefillin tall around that kever, so then it's technically a mokum for the atzmo, and technically it's not called a violation of being kovri Yisrael Eitzel Goy. So that was one innovative. There are some places that have tzuris pesachs around certain areas, prisons, around the whole Boreis Kvura, the whole Boreis Kvarm, they have tzuris pesach surrounding it, because they don't get involved with what the status of other people in the basic Kvaros are. So that's their own halachically. We just span areas. Combine years and areas, before the halacha mice into one. Okay, I don't think we ever pulled that one off yet this year. Okay. Good, everybody, so back to that story. So Mila we got, pretty straightforward what to do. Normally you do a regular Mila, you can't do a Tavistan Bris, and there's one or two cases where maybe you get away with almost nothing or really nothing. Then we move into the second part, the major component of Tevila. We said Tevila is absolutely paskali kuva, no shadow about it. And this part, of course, is true both for men and for women. When we speak about Tevila, so the most important part of Tevila is that it be done properly. And how do you know when the Tevila is being done properly? So you have to follow whatever the standards of Tevila are in Kol HaTarkulos. That's what the Gemara says in the fourth breath of Masechet Yevamos, that B'makom Shenidah Tevelas, Sham Ger Tevel, Kesher Yidav Shechotetz B'nidah, Chotetz B'ger, all the regular dinim of Yerodei Chelik Beis just spill over to Yerodei Chelik Gimel. So just again, not learning all books and puzzles right now, just to familiarize ourselves from the Gaelic vantage point, what we should be aware of is that first and foremost, you have to make sure that the body of water that's being used is kosher for Tevila. Now, that may sound simpler than it really is. Not every body of water under the sun is necessarily kosher for Tevila. So again, without going through the details of the process right now, there are basically two different models of bodies of water that would be acceptable, both for Nid as well as for Geirus. One is a Mayan, an underground spring kind of a thing, like the Ariz Mikvah kind of a setup. And the other one is a collection of rainwater. Actually, this is Pasha. Achmayin Abba Mikvah Miyatoha. Either one of those two bodies of water would be acceptable. Provided that, again, is built with all the specifications in terms of the controls. One of the things that would not be acceptable, and a person should do, this would be like a disaster if you would do, is that if you use what's called colloquially a men's mikvah, and there are many, many men's mikvahs floating around in the world. Some of them are actually kosher mikvahs. Some of them are built mamish according to the halachas of mikvahs. They just called men's mikvahs because men use them. But there are some mikvahs that are known as men's mikvahs that are not really built properly. They're built properly for the purposes of men's mikvahs, which the standards are very, very low for a men's mikvah, because we're not dealing with any tefillah d'oraisa anyway. We're not talking about a guy who's struggling to go harbayis or something. I'm not commenting one way or the other on that. But that would require a real tefillah d'oraisa, even those who are advocating today. We're not talking about tefillah for a woman. We're not talking about tefillah to be true or culture, things like that. We're talking about tefillah for tefillah Ezra, maybe. We're talking about, you know, chasidus and precious and, you know, Erev Shabbos and those kinds of stuff. So those kinds of things don't require an absolute bona fide kosher mikvah. You can even have what's called mayim shuvim. You can have water that was just collected in buckets, collected in pails, or came right out of the New York City faucet, and you just filled up a big, big, giant bathtub, and that's a men's mikvah. That was one of these down the hill on 187th Street. So the number of mikvahs, the best analogy, it was, right? If I'm not mistaken, I think it's still just a giant bathtub. So you have a big, big hole in the ground, and you fill it up with city water and church. So that's good for Tefillah Ezra, but that's not good for Tefillah Deraisa. Remember one year in Erev Yom Kippur when I went down the hill to be Toivol. So we Ikra didn't, Erev Yom Kippur really allowed to use my Shuvim. So I remember I was thinking, as I was walking down the hill, which Mikvah should I go to? And I told myself, you know what? Come on, it's Erev Yom Kippur. Go for the Deraisa. Come, you lift your Hashem Petar of the Rabbonah, you don't talk Deraisa. What are you really, really talk? So okay, so I went the extra mamatz. I paid a few extra dollars. Remember, instead of going to 187th, I turned down to 186th to go there. And it was Mamash. Mamash, I thought, paid me back. Because as I was walking towards the direction of the real mikvah. So somebody collapsed on the street in front of me. So I have to call it Tzavah Hashem, I don't want to happen to the person. But it's Mamash Fresh in mind, because I decided I'm going to the rice and the good to be left. I would have got the dump from the person would still have died. I don't know what would happen. Okay. Anyway. So, I'm not such a bald mug face, but every once in a while I could tell you. See, we'd get them snagged to go to the mikvah, that's what happens. Okay, once a year. So if you use a men's mikvah, that would be a disaster, because a men's mikvah is Mam Shulpin, which according to the Ramos trap is possible to derise us. The person's not Jewish at all. That would be a terrible mistake. Sometimes people make this mistake in Tzulas Kalim. I don't realize that a guy, I'm going to the men's mikvah on Friday afternoon, and I'll take my silverware with me to title. That's no good. Tzulas Kalim requires a real mikvah. It has to be Mayim Sheir, not Mayim Shulpin. So first and foremost, you have to make sure that the body of water is acceptable. If it's a natural body of water, let's say around the Buni somewhere, and you want to do a Tefillas Geiros, and you go, oh, this is great, I got a lake over here, I got a stream over here, I got a pond over here. Well, it's not so simple. That's very, very complicated. The rules of the Kabbalah are very, very intricate as to which natural bodies of water are acceptable or not. The basic rule is that if it's a collection of rainwater, it has to be stationary. If it's underground spring water, then it can move. Like, every mikvah is not a mikvah, it's a mayon, then it can be moving. But if it's a collection of rainwater, then it has to be stationary. That's what the Gemara has a whole discussion in the Dara about rivers. That rivers are not so simple that they're kosher, because rivers, depending on the time of the year, sometimes of the year they are mostly spring water, sometimes mostly rainwater, not with snow, depends on the season, depends on the river. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about rivers. It's a complicated sugya in the Dara, in the fourth parak, about using the Harpras, about using the Euphrates. The Gemara says sometimes of the year yes and sometimes of the year no. The Gemara says that in the springtime you can't use the Euphrates, because in the springtime all the melted snow off the mountains of Turkey are filling up the Euphrates. So rove of the water is maybe shamim. That's made shalik and maybe shamim, so that. And the rivers are always ochem, they're always moving. So the Euphrates is possible for the tefillah. So the Gemara says you have to be careful. So I remember years ago in the Second Gulf War, so it broke out right after, around this time of the year, so the end of March. I remember I was listening on the radio, so some commentator was giving a whole shiur quality about on the radio why the Americans invaded Iraq daft at this time of the year, because of the Euphrates, because the Euphrates is overflowing over its banks now because it's the end of March and this is the right time. They gave me a whole pismet of that. But I realized I could have given the exact same speech because it's right out of Iran in the Sefer Siddur. The heart process hasn't changed much for 2,000 years. It does whatever it used to do. It continues to do. So you have to know. So if you live in Iraq, you have to make sure not to use the Euphrates for 2 days half the year. And if you live in other places, you have to be careful. So before you use any body of water for Hilchos Geirus, you better make sure that it's a kosher mikvah. I mean kosher mikvah, I mean a real kosher mikvah, not some half-baked, you know, dry bed. So it'll be kosher a lot of there. So in addition to the chevtzah, the mikvah itself, the tefillah has to be done properly, and therefore it has to be clear of all of the chatzitzas. Again, I assume everyone's here in the 40 years, probably will learn Tuchas Nida and Mikvos at some point, so the tefillah part. So you're all aware of the fact that there are basic halachas of chatzitzas. So the two basic rules of chatzitzas are that in order to be a chatzitza in a Torah, it has to be something which is ruba hamach, it has to be on most of the person's body, and something that the person really cares, that really doesn't want to be there. If it has both of those criteria, then it's a chatzitza mideraisa. The odds of you ever passing a chatzitza mideraisa shaila in your life are next to zero, because nobody in their right mind would ever be tovel with the chatzitza and robe of their body with their machpir on. So that would mean the woman just went mudsliding, and now before she takes a shower, she wants to be tovel first. So she's covered from head to toe in mud, and she goes to the mikvah. That would be a tefillah psula mideraisa. Anything short of that would only be the rabbanon. The Gemara says in the Sefer Divrei that Chazal made a takana that even if it's a mira machpid, that's a problem. So all of our shalos of chatzitza, every single one, from the lenses that you've got to take out, to the nail polish you've got to take off, to the stitches, to the band-aids, you name it, everything, how come it goes on with the rabbanon? Because it's always a mir. So, but the din is it's still chatzitza, so you have to be careful about that. So the Gemara says that the same way you have to be careful about that for tefillahs and nivah, you have to be careful about that for tefillahs and geirus as well. So the person has to be helped, has to be supervised to make sure that all the chatzitzas are being removed properly. And when we speak about chatzitzas in the face of the farm. Also, you have to be careful with the trips and aid and issues of whatever shadows come up, stitches and braces, whatever you stand, whatever you think the answer to those questions are. So you have to make sure that the gerus is being done properly as well. So again, the mila is done properly, the tefillah is done independently properly, and if both of those things are done properly, then and only then does the person become a Jewish. But there is a lamdashic question when we say that then and only then the person becomes Jewish. So what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara says, Liyolim and Agashim will be involved. Again, there are two processes, Milan and Nesfila. So what does that mean? Does that mean lamdus conceptually that when the person does Mila, the mamash not Jewish? Mamash, nothing happens. They're a full-fledged goy. They want to opt out at that point, no problem. So they're a circumcised goy, absolutely nothing happens. What do I say? No, not so simple. That Eino Gerash Yom Yitzvah means that the Gerus is not complete until the Tevila, that is true. On the other hand, it's not a nothing. Mila is not a meaningless thing. A Mila Shem Gerus, that's a big thing. So maybe there was some halachic implications of what the person did. So that's unclear. So there are some achronim who hold that Le'olam and again or Gerach Yimov Yitzvah, finish, end of discussion, zero, zippo. Absolutely nothing happened at that point. And others say no. Others say that something happened, a little bit happened, the mashram started, the process got started. Man of Kavina, why would we care whether the process didn't get started? Man of Kavina. So there is a shadow, which hopefully we're going to talk about a little bit later. About different halachas, not so much how to make the ger, but different halachas that govern during the process, namely certain things that a ger has to be aware of while he's in the process of converting. So one of the important halachas that a ger has to be made aware of is the status of Shmir Shabbos, because the halach is that a goy is not allowed to keep Shabbos. Versus Akav Shabbos, that's a problem. That's an issa min haTorah. The Gemara derives from the pasuk of Yishbosus. So the Torah Shabbat Peh explains that pasuk is alluding to the fact that a goy is not allowed to observe Shabbos. That's a big, big shiloh. Why that's so? What the nature of that din is? Again, hopefully we'll talk about that probably towards the very end of the shiurim as to what the parameters of that din are, what the lumdus is based on, what the halach lemaaseh applications are. But that's a very, very real shiloh about Akav Shabbos. So there was a shiloh that came up about the following. Sometimes there's a little bit of a break in the middle of the tefillah. The Gemara says that when you do the meal, you have to wait a few days until the person heals properly. You don't want to throw it, you have to put it with a bandage, throw it into the mikvah. So you have to wait for the area to heal a little bit. So there's going to be an interim of a few days at least that is in between the meal and the tefillah. And it's very possible that Shabbos fall down in the middle of those days. So now what do you do? So is such a person supposed to keep Shabbos or not? So who would have asked now? He said, why should you keep Shabbos? He said, good. He didn't do a tefillah yet. Or maybe no, maybe you could argue that he's not really a goy anymore. He's somewhere in limbo, somewhere in the middle. He's already been nichnas to some degree into some form of Kedushas Yisrael, some shape or form. And maybe at that point he's already eligible, and maybe he should, maybe he's supposed to keep Shabbos. So it's unclear exactly what the din is. Okay, and that shayla depends on the lumbus as to what the role, the relationship between the mila and tefillah is. So the background of the Shabbos is a very famous Maisa Shahaya. It's quoted in the Shabbos Chuvas Binyan Tzion. It was written by Rabbi Yaakov Pattinger, the Machaber of the Orphan there. He was also the Rebbe of Shem Shol Hirsch's Rebbe. So he has descendants who still live in the Heights, Ada Yevazet, his name is Ellinger. One of them was a teacher of one of my kids back there, years gone by. So Yaakov Ellinger has, in his Chuvas Binyan Tzion, he has a... The reason why the tshuva is called Binyan Tzion, this particular tshuva happens to take place in Yerushalayim also, but that's not why it's called the Sefer Binyan Tzion. It was called Binyan Tzion because the first tshuva was in response to a Tzirish Kalash about rebuilding the base of Mikdash with Manazet. The Tzirish Kalash in the early 1800s got this grandiose plan that they can rebuild the base of Mikdash, they're going to buy off the Harabais, they're going to rent the Harabais from the Turks, and they're going to stop bringing Karbanos again. So we sent Shiloh to the Kveg and some sites for Binyan Tzion, only to build in Europe to get their input into the Shiloh. So a lot of papers, all the Shahs and Jews are written down the topic. There was one small catch. What was the catch? The Turks weren't interested in playing ball. They turned down the offer, so the whole thing went up in smoke, so that never happened. But we still have the Tshuva. So Binyan Tzion wrote back his first Tshuva. He talked about Binyan Tzion, rebuilding the Beis Mikdash. So he named the whole Tshuva as Binyan Tzion. So this particular Shiloh is in that Sefer, and just by quirk, by coincidence, it happens to have taken place in Yerushalayim also, the Shiloh. The Shiloh was sent to Binyan Tzion as a Rav in Germany. Thousand miles away from Shalai. They sent in this Shaila after an accident. What happened was follows. Apparently there was a person who was converting in Yerushalayim, and he had went a Mila, and he was waiting to have the Tefillah, and the Shabbos came, and there was a whole sikhs, a whole fight broke out in Yerushalayim. How many people in Yerushalayim? There were only a handful of people. So in the Shul in Yerushalayim, there was a big sikhs that broke out about what this person should do. Should he be observing Shabbos, or Daf cannot be observing Shabbos? So apparently, Shmuel Salat was a Rav in Yerushalayim, I think, at the time, and he was out of town, and he was away there Shabbos. So there was a whole discussion in the other Rabban Yerushalayim what to do. So there were a group of Rabban who insisted that this person be Mechal Shabbos. That we Mechayim, he must be Mechal Shabbos. If he's not Mechal Shabbos, it'll be a Goyish Shabbat, it'll be a Nistagomer. So we can insist he's Mechal Shabbos. So the way the story is written up is that they, right before Mincha, Shabbos afternoon, they told him to sign his name. They must tell him to take a pen and write your name. Chil Shabbos Gomer Deraisa. You know, there shouldn't be any question. So when, and other Rabban thought that was incorrect. So they sent the Shah to Yerach Hanef to be Tzion, he thought that that was a mistake himself. He thought that the other Rabban who disagreed were correct. Why? He has this idea, he says that once you did Mili, you're not a nothing, you're already out of the role of being an Acham. You're not an Acham anymore, but you're not yet Yisrael, so it's okay. You not only can you keep Shabbos, Yerach Hanef has a double chiddush. First of all, he thinks you can't keep Shabbos, then he thinks you must keep Shabbos, you must keep Shabbos. There's a fascinating historical raya. It means a raya. He says that Klal Yisrael were in that limbo position for 7 weeks. That's how we started off the sugya. They received the bris milah Yitzchak Mitzrayim. They didn't go to the mikvah till Erev Shavuos. So for 7 weeks they were geshem ovel tovol. And guess what? What mitzvah did they get in that interim? They got Shabbos. So you see that the Rabban Shimon kibaskin again. The Rabban Rishalayim kibaskin that you can't get Shabbos and you have to get Shabbos even though you're a geshem ovel tovol. It's a very, very fascinating creative riot. Anyway, bottom line is that this Nachmanin Ladina, this is really a reflection of what our take is, what we think the relationship to Mila Tefillah is. Is the Mila really nothing by itself, or the Mila does get the ball rolling to a certain extent? There is a major issue that the Rishonim raised about this requirement of Mila Tefillah. So it's Chayk L'Yav, you need Mila, you need a Tefillah. And the Gemara always speaks about Eino Gashim of Yitfol. It's always understood the meal is happening before the tefillah. That's like Keseder. So the Ramban and Yevamos in the fourth paragraph raises the question, is that really true? Is it really necessary? Is that just kind of just the way it was done? Is there really a halakhic reason for that? It has to be meal before tefillah? What are you flipping around? Right now the mikvah is open. It's going to be closed tomorrow. So we want to do the tefillah now and do the meal tomorrow. What's wrong with that? So Ramban writes nothing. What's wrong with that? It's a little day. We want to do the tefillah before the meal. Gagas and day. What could possibly be wrong? Why would we even think that you have to have a mila before tefillah? So the Ramban, not only does he say there's no reason to think that it would be good, he actually brings a raya. So the raya is fascinating. I'll say the raya quickly now, but we'll hopefully appreciate the raya more in about 3-4 weeks from now. When we get to the sugya which is called Uberish in the Gaia, Uberish in the Gaia means when you have a woman who's pregnant, not Jewish, and she wants to convert. So the Gemara says, no problem, she can convert when she's pregnant. And guess what? The good news is, Benoit is up to tefillah. The child, when he's born, or if she's born, will not require a tefillah. That the tefillah that the mother had, that's going to be good enough on behalf of the child. How does that work? Well, the mechanics of that, that's a lot of lomdus. A big, big machlokes in the Gemara. Is that based on the Rechim? Well, now the Rechim is one tefillah, two tefillah. Based on what? But hopefully, again, when we talk about Rashi's guy, we'll fill in the details of that. But the Gemara is the favorite that it works. So the Rabban says, when that child's going to be born now, let's say it's a boy. So that boy is going to need a mila, the Ramban argues. And he's going to need a mila Shem Gavus, argues the Ramban, which is a very, very questionable statement. Again, we're going to flesh this all out in the weeks to come. But just bear with us with the Ramban's line of reasoning. The Ramban says that every non-Jewish person requires a mila and tefillah, or tefillah mila. So look at what the order is. So the chronology of the Seder Gavus for this baby is, he underwent a tefillah in utero, and now he's about to undergo a mila after birth. So says Ramban, wait a second, what is that in order? Said, so what do you see from there? Is that from there? You see from here that this is the market. That just as in this crazy case of Geirus, the tefillah precedes the mila, so too, if you want to do it the other way, you want to flip around, you want to do the tefillah first. So take this, you don't really lose all that much by doing the tefillah before the mila. That was the Ramban's argument. So Adi Rishon says, no, not true at all. Adi Rishon said, that's a big problem, you can't just flip the order. So there are always the Talmud and Ramban. So there are all says, no, that's not a good raya that is Rebbe brought. You can argue with the raya. Why? When you did the tefillah on the Reveshes Gaira, there was no way to do a mila. It was impossible to do a mila. So at that moment in time, the baby of Yalach was like in a keva. So the Gairus was done, the tefillah alone. So now when the baby's born, of course it needs a mila, but it's not a mila's Gairus, it's a mila's Yisrael, it's a mila's Shemitzvah. And therefore says there are, you can't bring me a raya that you can have a tefillah before a mila. That particular Gairus is like a tefillah's keva. There is no mila, the Shem Gairus. They're all together. There never was, and never will be, and therefore the whole raya is not an acceptable raya. So that's a fascinating lomdish machlokes in Rabban and the Ra'ah. what's going on in Rabbi Hashem's garus? Again, we don't know yet enough about the intricacies of that sugya to appreciate the rayas, the arguing back and forth from the Rabban and the Ra'ah. But the impact of that sugya is great, because the Ramban develops this idea that you can flip the water, no problem. And the Ra'ah says, no, you can't. So if there's no raya that you can flip the water, maybe you can't. Why not? Like, what's the compelling reason to think that you can't flip the water? It's one thing to say there's no raya, there is a raya, not a raya, but one of those things, why should keeping that water be important? Why is it so critical that the Milas to perceive the tefillah? Again, the Ramban thought it wasn't so critical. Why would anybody think that it is critical? So different Rishonim have different reasons why. So the Ritva writes, in Yavamis, he thinks the reason why the order is absolutely critical is because otherwise it's going to be a chisaron of Tevav Asheretz B'yadoy, a whole other sugya. And the Rashba writes, he thinks that you have to keep the order in that because it's the tefillah that's the real machas of Yishus Yisrael, and that's got to be the last point. You got to walk out of that mikvah and say, machas of the Jewish. You walk out of the mikvah and then go run to the mile. That's not going to work. So you got intricate reasons in Rishonim as to why the order should be important. So again, you have the Ramban who says that the order is not really so important, but it is right. The Rishonim was saying the order is very, very important, and now you have a different Rishonim giving different reasons why. So we have to stop now. Hopefully until next year. So hopefully we'll continue to try just to fine-tune a little bit this Rishonim Machlokes Ramban, Rishonim the Rashba. Is the order important? If so, why is it important? Then try to see out how this plays out potentially in the minds of other people.